Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, look at us. Bar Down Breakdown. We're here with our buddy, Daniel, from the home team. He's a repeat guest.
Friends?
He's back with us. What's going on, man? Daniel's part of the home team. They're a great band. They've got a new record coming out October 22nd. It's called Slow Burn. It's a Casey Musgraves tribute record. It's going to be great. No, it's called Slow Bloom. It comes out in a couple of weeks. I pre-ordered the record. Apparently the record is never, ever, ever going to get to me. That's fine. Apparently never. No records are ever getting to anybody ever again. But dude, Daniel, thank you so much for being back here with us, chilling with us. Talk a little bit about, the new record coming up in a little bit. And of course some crack in hockey, but, what's going on, man? What are you up to right now?
Hell yeah. Thank you guys for having me. Lots of getting ready for tour. We finished the record, like, and we got the final mixes back in like March. But once the recording is done, that means all of the promotion and video shoots and everything starts. So we have been grinding nonstop for the last, like, fuck, at this point it feels like the last year. Just basically getting ready for like the album drop and tour coming up in a couple weeks.
Sick. Now you're talking about like videos and stuff. I think you guys have you've released four singles from the record so far, and I think every single has had a music video, has it not?
Yep, that is correct.
That's wild, man.
We have a fifth video that's going to be coming out a couple days before the album drops. So we're going to drop the last single like 3 days before the album comes out.
Cool. Now, if you can enlighten us, just, you know, the kind of behind the scenes stuff, did you like have pretty much all of the music videos recorded like in succession, or did you actually do them like part and parcel, like, you know, 1 month here, 1 month there, were they all just like a blast kind of?
So we started by taking a trip down to LA to shoot like the first two videos that we did. Mm-hmm. So the first singles that came out were Right Through Me and Move It or Lose It. We were looking for spots to shoot those videos, and we decided to drive down from Seattle to LA, take like a little week trip, rent out some studios down there and film most of the stuff for those two videos. So we did those two in one trip. Yeah, I think entirely. And then Brian, our singer, actually edits and like directs all of our videos. Obviously he hires someone, you know, like to come and shoot the stuff that he's in. But aside from that, like it's mostly his brainchild. He and John, our guitarist, like come up with the concept for the video, but then it's like Brian takes it and kind of runs with it. I am purely, when it comes to that, I show up and I play and I help with logistics. It's mostly his work. And then afterwards he edits everything. So literally like right behind me is where all the music video editing takes place. And I think we pretty much did everything. Like we'd finish the video and then we'd just get started on the next one. So like the first two videos were shot at the same time and everything was edited. And it's just like, once that single comes out and all the ads and everything for it are done, then we get started on the next one. And it was just like that process. Actually, we literally got the most recent video back yesterday. So it's that's basically how it goes.
Damn.
Well, I'm sure Revival loves that Brian does a lot of this stuff himself. I'm sure it's a little bit cheaper than if they had to hire, you know, their own videographer or whatever title that would be.
We actually we have like we pay Brian for it. So like we like incur an expense against like the band account through the label to pay Brian out, because that's like the main thing that he's doing. And so he's spending, you know, like 40 hours a week working on our content. So it's like the man should get paid.
No, absolutely, man. I think that's a great thing. I think, you know, that like the band mentality of old was like, you know, you put every ounce of your blood, sweat and tears, including like all of your life savings into like your band to try to make it big. So it's cool to know that, you know, that while it's not like a bad thing necessarily to put up, you know, all you have into your music, it's nice to know that, you know, you guys are like, hey, listen, I mean, you know, this is what the man does is for his 9 to 5. We got to make sure that, you know, he can put food on the table and do what he's got to do. But I mean, all of the videos that you guys have put out thus far, you know, not to sit here and blow smoke up your ass, but I mean, they've all been excellent.
Keep it coming.
Listen, man, it's kind of interesting. I should probably share this with you just because, so when we first had got you guys on the show, it was really like a Mikey discovery, and you know, he had come across, you know, some tracks from the record prior, and he was like, oh, you know, you got to check these guys out. Like, you know, so, and you'll have to forgive me just because I forget the name of it, but he showed me the song that you guys had, which is essentially just Cats
and Fashion Forward.
Fashion Forward, right? So Fashion Forward, great tune. But I remember hearing it and I remember being like, oh yeah, these guys sound like Panic at the Disco. That's pretty cool, you know?
Yep.
Now fast forward to like this new record that like has like completely blown me out of the water, because it's like, it's really nothing like that. It's so diverse. It's so interesting. And I mean, like you can really see like musicianship, you guys have upped the ante, production, you've upped the ante. And, you know, this record is really kind of the magnum opus, it seems. But, you know, it kind of is interesting how you get sold on a band, right? And like, you know, as soon as Right Through Me came out, like I was like, oh my God, like this is the real deal. And then all the other singles that you guys have put out since then have also been awesome. So I got to give kudos to Mikey, because you wouldn't have ever been on my radar. And now you guys are, and I couldn't be anticipating like a record anymore. So like, F yeah, let's go.
Dude, thank you.
You're very welcome, man. So on that note, just kind of like maybe talk a little bit about what went into the creation of this record, and how you wanted to be a little bit different from the record prior. Did you guys go in with like kind of a blueprint of, okay, this is what we want to sound like, this is how we want the songs to come together or get structured? Or was it like, you know, you had some music fleshed out, and once you got in the studio and you realized like, oh wow, we can like, you know, kind of pull and tug this and sort of like do the Silly Putty thing where you just kind of stretch it to be a little bit different. Is that kind of how it ended up for you guys, or was everything fleshed out beforehand?
So I feel like with our first record, and the material before that, we all come from metal and hardcore. Like that's all of our backgrounds. We all met playing in different metal bands. And that's where we've done most of our touring before the home team. So I feel like when we started the home team, we had this like, we wanted to stay away from metal and focus on like something more accessible. And so I feel like we were always trying to fit ourselves into this mold of like what a modern pop punk band should sound like. And to be totally honest, like that's just not really what any of us listen to. You know, we like, we're just, we don't, we listen to more heavy music than pop punk. So we don't really, you know, we're not in our personal lives. We don't listen to a ton of like the active pop punk bands. And I feel like we were always trying to fit that mold. And I think the big, one of the big moments for me was when I discovered the band Don Broco. Not necessarily like sound wise, but just kind of like attitude and approach to music wise. Because those guys do whatever the hell they want. They are ahead of the, like they set the trend. And it really like opened my eyes to like, dude, we can do, like, we can incorporate the shit that we like. It doesn't, we don't have to do this like cookie cutter pop punk and like fit into what other bands are doing. We should just do what we want to do. So when we started writing for this record, we had in the back of our minds, like, okay, this one needs to be different. We can't just do the same thing. We want to do something that sounds more like that, that represents us as like musicians and as like music listeners better. But we also had like this idea of, okay, what can we do to be weird? Like what are other bands not doing? So John had this idea of, all right, I'm going to incorporate 8-string guitar on almost every song. And like not in a, you know, down tune breakdown kind of way. But in more of like getting that really low frequency, like kind of like sub bass feel to everything.
Just real quick. Like one of the first things I noticed when I heard the chorus and Right Through Me was that I was just like, oh my God, there's so much like depth in this, in this chorus. And like, and the interesting thing is like, I, you know, I like, I pick apart things 'cause I'm kind of a music nerd. So like you hear the chorus the first time and it's just like straight chords with that, like the 8-string underlying. And then like you hit the chorus again and you get him like riffing on the chords and he's got a, he's got those, oh man, it's just like, it's like, I wish there was more like out there that like would do stuff like this. So you can continue, but I just had to like interject with that, that point, because it's just like, that was one of the first things I noticed as I was like, oh, this chorus is so heavy. And then the chorus comes back and I'm like, oh shit, that's like the same chords, but he's like, you know, riffing on it and on these 16ths. And it's just so cool, man.
And that's one of the things, like we get asked a lot, like, how would you describe your new sound? Like, who would you compare it to? And I feel like we always struggle with finding like an at, like a really good comparison. 'Cause we're like, oh, it kind of sounds like this, but like, not really. It kind, but it kind of sounds like this, but not really. And I feel like we've done some, like we have something that's pretty unique. And not a lot of bands sound like that. We were a little nervous when we finished, like we've all, you know, I always say every musician is delusional. We all think that our next shit's going to be the stuff to pop off. I've been saying that since I was 15, that like, oh, this EP, this is the one I'm blowing up. But I, this is like, this is the first time I really feel like we did something that is, people are going to hear and be like, I've never heard anything like this. Like with our last record, we get kind of the same, like five or six, like, oh, it kind of sounds like Panic at the Disco, kind of sounds like, you know, some Fall Out Boy reference, like it's the same couple comparisons. But with this, so far with the singles we put out, it's been all over the place. Like people don't know what the hell they're listening to. And we get comparisons to like, people are hitting us up saying like, oh, this reminds me of like, you know, Breaking Benjamin, but a little bit more like a little bit like softer. And then we're getting other stuff. We're like, oh, it's you know, it's more like Issues sounding. So, but overall in like the songwriting process, we kind of really found our stride like three or four songs in. I remember it specifically, it was the song Move It or Lose It. That was the second single we put out. I remember we've always had like, we all have our own different writing styles. Brian comes from like a more technical, like progressive metalcore background. Like that's what he's really into. So when he would write stuff, it oftentimes he leans a little bit more towards like the complicated side of things.
Sure.
John, our guitarist, has is much more interested in like the old school pop punk Fall Out Boy Jimmy Eat World style. And so he would write stuff that was like kind of overly simple. But Move It or Lose It is the first time where the I remember like being in the room when they combined forces basically, and like John wrote something that was a little bit too simple, and then Brian like added to it, and then they like met in the middle, and like it felt like they found the perfect balance. And when we finished that song, that was the one where we're like, yo, that is what we need to do. Let's do more of that. And that was like really what kickstarted the whole album writing process. Cause that was like the third or fourth song we wrote. And then after that, we pumped out like the rest of the album in a couple months.
So, I got one more question, and then I know Mikey's keeps breathing in to ask a question, but like, I'm just going for it. So, looking through, so I want to talk about the Veil of Maya, like a signature that's on the last track of the record, but Another Night Alone With You, that's got Yvette from Covet, right?
Yep.
So, I love Covet. And that's such a super cool thing. Who was like, who in the band was like Covet was on their radar to get that, I keep calling it a signature, but what is it really called?
A feature.
A feature. That's what they call it. Yeah. Excellent. Number one podcaster. But yeah, so like, who was on like who had like Covet on their radar? Cause like they're just like they rip, man. I love them.
Yeah. So that was John's doing. So John hit up Yvette for I think I'm not sure how they first met, but he hit her up to buy some art from her because she's like she's just super talented artist, you know, guitar player obviously, but like multi-instrumentalist and also an artist.
Yep.
And he hit her up to buy some art. And so he bought some art from her and they just, you know, kind of became friends over the internet, just chatting for a while. And then I think he went down to the Bay Area, on like a little trip and just met up with her and kind of pitched the idea like, hey, we've got a song. We think you would be, you know, you'd be a great fit as a feature. And from what he told me, she was really excited about like kind of branching out of the shreddy prog world.
Yeah,
because once you get into that, like that's what she's known for, is being, you know, the crazy shred guitar player. Which that's what Covet is, but like they're also so, you know, so melodic, like they could be placed anywhere.
For sure.
I first saw them when they were opening for Dance Gavin Dance, which, you know, that like they have mainstream appeal now. But we actually don't, Yvette is purely a vocal feature on that. So we wanted to have her do something that is like different and let her showcase like her singing too. So she sings on it and it sounds fucking killer.
Yeah, no, it really does. And you know, the funny thing is like when I think of Covet, I kind of like think of like that sort of math rocky, like Maps and Atlases, you know, like some of that other like kind of Sergeant House top shelf stuff, like that's where like it gets me. But and that's the thing about Covet is that, you know, their music is really so like, you know, you could put them, you know, on the same path as like Animals as Leaders, or you could put them in the same path as like a band like A Great Big Pile of Leaves or something like that, where like they have that versatility. And I think that's kind of the cool thing about the home team is like you guys have this versatility in you where like you could fit onto a pop punk show. You could probably fit onto like an R&B or like a soul show, or you could even, I don't know if you could like, you could play like a metal show. Like, I don't know like how that would really go, but like you definitely could kind of like explore any of those different options. And I think having that versatility in music today is excellent because like that means that like any tour that comes a knocking, you could just be like, yeah, we could fit on that for sure. And then you now open yourself up to being able to do all of this other stuff where, you know, back 15 years ago, it was like, you know, unheard of that like a pop punk band and like, you know, a hardcore band would like tour together, with the exception of like a, you know, a small few with like, you know, Shai Hulud and, splintering off into newfound glory, or then a little bit later where, you know, Stick to Your Guns and The Story So Far have their relationship. But like, everything was always like, oh, it's got to fit into this mold. Like, you got to have like Punchline and Spitalfield, and like, you got to all be together. But now you can, you know, be out there and kind of use your versatility in a way that can get you more gigs, get you paid. So I think that's awesome. And the feature is super cool. I think it's a great track, like, all together, but I really kind of have a lot of interest on that last track that you guys have, which I'm dying to listen to. I know it's Veil of Maya. And then I think it's Jeff, who is in, what is it? Arch Enemy, right? Like, so, so it's like all of this like death metal stuff. So how does that fit in?
So we met. So the Veil of Maya feature is Lucas, the vocalist.
Okay.
It just worked out that he doesn't have like his own Spotify page, so it pulls up the Veil of Maya thing.
Sure.
It's also a little bit marketing, because then we end up on Veil of Maya's page. So exactly. There's that too.
Of course.
But Yvette and Jeff have their own Spotify pages, so that's why we linked them. So we met Lucas in Minneapolis in 2019. We were on just a full US headliner, and we played a show with his band, with his other band. I think they're the Airway is what they're called. And so like they opened for us. And so we were at the venue, and you know, we had a couple friends there, and we're looking, we're like, I think Brian was like, dude, I'm pretty sure that guy's the singer of Veil of Maya. And I was like, what the fuck is he doing here? And it turns out we were playing with like his pop rock band. So after the show, you know, we just met and chatted for a little bit. And I think we ended up getting food after the show, and just kind of hit it off and stayed in touch. And when the song came out, when we were recording the song, we hit him up and we're like, dude, we'd love to get a feature on, you know, one of these songs. So we sent him a couple options, and we ended up deciding on this track, Danger. The craziest part is the Jeff Loomis solo. I'm not gonna spend time talking about how sick it is. You're just gonna have to hear it when it comes out. That song has, without a doubt, like the heaviest section we've ever written. And it's not like not like a breakdown, like a, you know, palm muted chugga chugga breakdown. But kind of similar to the way that like the Right Through Me chorus is really is like really big. That the end of that song definitely has like the heaviest thing we've ever written. And there is a fucking bonkers Jeff Loomis solo at the end of it. We didn't like, we had nothing to do with that. We just, the guy that we, that is our engineer, works with Jeff a lot. And so we were just in the studio talking like, dude, it'd be so sick if we had a solo here. And he just pitched. He's like, I bet I could get Jeff to do one. And we're like, no fucking way. No, you can't.
That's so wild.
So we just texted him, and we sent him the track, and he's like, oh, this is sick. Yeah, I'll write something. And honestly, we kind of thought he was going to phone it in a little bit, because we're like, you know, he's like a, you know, virtuoso guitar player.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, he's like a generational talent shredder. And we're like a pop rock band with some, you know, with a kind of a heavy part in one song. He was like, I love this. And he fucking went all in. So that's actually the only song that we haven't shown even our Patreon.
Oh, wow.
We've leaked every other song on the record. So the people in our Patreon have heard the entire record already. It's like one by one. That's the one where like, you are going to experience this for the first time, like at high def, you know, streaming on Spotify when, you know, when you listen to the whole thing.
Yeah. It's awesome. I love it.
Now you mentioned your audio engineer. I know on your first record, you guys worked with Casey Bates. Who'd you guys work with on this one?
So the last record was like produced, mixed, and engineered and mastered by Casey. So we just went to him. He did everything. He was involved in the pre-production, the whole thing. With this one, we went basically the exact opposite route. We had our buddy Sky from Issues, or I guess now at this point, 21 Pilots. He flew out and produced the record for us. So he came in and helped with the pre-production and like a little bit of songwriting, and played bass on the whole thing. We had our buddy Aaron Smith. He is the guy who worked with Jeff Loomis. His old band, Seven Horns, Seven Eyes, was a big, like a prog band on Century Media back in like the 2010s. So we actually recorded our first couple EPs with him too. So he engineered it. And then we had Seb Barlow from Neck Deep mix the whole thing.
Oh, sweet.
And then Chris Crummett mastered the whole thing afterwards. So we kind of, we went like to this guy and then to this guy and then to this guy. But at the end of the day, I don't think we could have picked anyone better to like, it sounds exactly how we wanted it to sound. I think we got the perfect group of people in to like bring our vision to life and be able to like blend the heavy aspects of like the 8-string and all the super low tunings that we use with the fact that vocals need to be super present and have kind of like that pop feel where it's like mostly, you know, it's like heavily about the singer.
So speaking of which, you got Brian hiding back there. Yeah. So I got just a quick question just about like Brian and that kind of like how a lot of this record is kind of built around, you know, some pop centricities and stuff. So like with the kind of talent level that he has vocally, like when you hear how he's like vocalizing on this record, like it almost seems to me like you go in with a vocal melody and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, but could you try this? Okay, but could you try that? And could you try this? And all of a sudden, like you've got this like complete space of like things that like you don't really hear vocally in pop punk. And you really only hear that the kind of stuff that he's doing in like pop music. So I think that's super cool. So like when he was going into like the booth, was he getting a lot of that? Like, was it like the producers and engineers just like, hey man, try it like this. Hey man, try it like that. You know, hey man, like do this, do that. Like, were you getting a lot of that?
Since he can hear me, I don't want to gas him up too much. I got to make sure to keep the ego down here. But actually most of that is just his doing.
Okay.
He goes all in on the pre-production. Mm-hmm. So when you listen to like the pre-production demos of everything, say probably 90% of what was on the pre-production makes it into the final version.
Wow.
Where Sky really helped. I don't think Sky had to do much to the vocal. It's not like he wasn't capable. It was more like he got to it and he was like, yeah, dude, this is sick. I don't know what you want me to do. Like, this is great. Where Sky really helped was on the like bringing that extra 10% to the songwriting. Mm-hmm. So taking our like verse chorus structure and doing little things to, you know, the second time we do the chorus, make this change on the second half to like bring it to the next level, or little things to like transition from one part to the next. Vocally, our producer or our engineer, that's one of the things that we really liked about him is like he just hears music in a complicated way that our brains just don't think that way. There's pros and cons. The big con, I will tell this story till the day I die. Before we got Sky in to produce everything, he was just going to play bass. And we had sent the demo of Move It or Lose It to the guy who ended up engineering the record. And we're like, hey, can you produce this? We want to, you know, give us some ideas. Let us know how you think we can improve it. And he sent us back a butchered version of that song with the most complicated drums I've ever heard in my life. And I was like, dude, I think I got it back at like 1 a.m. I didn't fall asleep till like 4 that morning because I was just like laying awake being like, this is fucking trash. I like, it's ruined. I don't, if everyone likes this, like, I don't know how I can finish this record.
Yeah.
I actually went down at like 2 a.m. that day and listened to like the Spotify top 50 like hits songs. I listened to every single song to make sure that my idea of like 4 on the floor, really groovy drums was like the direction.
Yeah.
And literally every song on that playlist had 4 on the floor on it.
Yeah.
So I was like, I validated myself. I told the band, I'm like, this is what we got sent. I hate it.
Yeah.
Everyone agreed. And we ended up going with Sky to produce. That's how, like, what kind of motivated us to get with Sky.
Yeah.
In the end, we ended up working with the engineer anyway, just strictly as an engineer. And we paid him. He ended up making more money than any of us on the record anyway. So, like, he can't be too bummed.
Yeah.
But one of the things that he really brings to the table is that, like, his brain just works in a different way than any of ours, which is that, like, outside opinion that we need in order to, like, try new things. So even though I didn't use most of what he sent drum wise, I actually did take a couple things, because there were a couple things that, like, I just never would have thought to go that direction. And so I like simplified some of the ideas he had and incorporated them into the final version. To tie all this back around to the initial question, vocally, what he really brings is, like, while Brian's in the booth, he's just, like, constantly spitting out ideas. Like, okay, well, what if we try this little tweak? And one of the things that really changed from the last record to this record is we got a lot better at, like, sticking to our guns and saying, you know, even though I hear what you're saying and I know you want to do it this way, like, this is what I wrote and this is the direction I want to go.
Yeah, of course.
So Brian got really good at trying out everything, but when he felt like he already had the thing he wanted and he liked his idea better, he got a lot better at saying no and being like, no, I'm going to do it this way.
Yeah. That's awesome. And it, like I said, you can hear just like you can just hear like some of the sweetness in it that just makes it so much different than a lot of other stuff out there, which I think is a cool thing. Now, one last question I have, and then I'll let Mikey field a couple. And it's a question that, like, maybe like a lot of times fans and listeners of music don't think about, but so you guys go into the studio, right, with like these, you know, fully fleshed out songs, right? So you go, you start working with a producer, and all of a sudden, like, you know, your producer goes and starts tweaking things and doing this and doing that. And then, you know, by the time the record's done, you've got these songs that, like, you mostly had skeletons of, but now that the producers flesh them out, they have some different parts and some different that kind of thing. But now, because this is on the record, everyone hears it. And that's what everyone wants to hear when they go to see you. So it's almost like, as a band, like, you've got to relearn, like, some of the music that, like, you already wrote, but because it got tweaked so much, you're like, you know, you go to sit down and run through your set and you're like, oh yeah, we elongated the chorus. Fuck, I forgot about that. Or, oh yeah, we like completely changed, like, you know, the rhythm of this bridge. Like, oh shit. So, like, did you guys kind of experience that where, like, now all of a sudden, like, to get tour ready, you're like, shit, we've got to, like, relearn songs that we already, like, conceived?
Yeah, for multiple reasons. One of which is when we're writing, like, we wrote and recorded 13 songs for this record. We wrote like 18, but 13, like, five of them vocals, never, Brian didn't get to the vocals. So those are just sitting in the Google Drive for the next record.
Okay.
We recorded 13, 11 are making it onto the final cut. There's so much work that goes into the album process and the release process that honestly, we don't get together to play every week. Like, we're not going to band practice and jamming once a week to write stuff. Like, there's multiple reasons for that. One, this was in the middle of quarantine, like pre-vaccine, when we wrote and recorded everything. So, like, our practice space is at my parents' house. So, like, we weren't going to my parents' house because they're older and we weren't vaccinated. And a couple of us were working and had to go out in public regularly. So we weren't trying to potentially expose them.
Of course.
But also, like, there's the playing aspect of being in a band is, like, such a small percentage of the time and energy that goes into things that after recording the record, like, we don't play the songs again. Brian has the lucky part of being able to, like, just sing in his car. He can just sing things.
Yeah.
I can, like, tap them out, you know, like, I listen to the songs to make sure I'm familiar with them. But before a tour, that's like, that's when we cram basically. Yeah. Like, and most, I think most bands that, you know, are bigger bands do the same thing. People don't always live in the same cities. You fly, yeah, like everyone practices on their own. Then mm-hmm. you fly in and you rehearse for a week or two, and then you go out and you do your shows.
Yeah.
So there's, I think one of our songs, I couldn't sit down and play it perfectly because we wrote some shit, like we demoed it out. So like we did a really thorough pre-production process mm-hmm. for this. So like we spent a week at our guitarist John's house with Sky. I had like an electric kit there. We literally recorded each song like mm-hmm. from scratch. I think except for vocals, we might not have redone those. But we like re-recorded everything, programmed the whole thing out. I was like playing everything. But then sometimes when you get into the actual studio, people come up with ideas. I'd say I had probably 95% of everything drum wise mm-hmm. like planned out. And I was literally like playing to tabs. Like I just tabbed it all out as I was going.
Yeah.
There's a couple songs I definitely couldn't play just from memory because I haven't practiced them and we're not playing them live. So I yeah. haven't had a reason to. I've just been like grinding the set.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we 100% have to relearn how to play our own material. And then there's also the added aspect of we have one guitarist and often there's three guitar parts. So live, we have a reamped guitar that goes from our computer to a reamp box out through another, like a Kemper and through another amp.
Okay.
So then John has to pick which of the guitar parts he's playing and send the other ones like yep. through the computer. So there's mm-hmm. a lot of intricacies in turning this record into an actual live performance.
That made Seriously. My brain hurt trying to think of how one person can do that.
I am, man. It's crazy.
But, you know, you do mention tour, and you guys are hitting the road in like 13 days. So have you started to cram yet?
Oh, yeah. We've been playing for the last, I don't know, 3 weeks at this point. Ryan, our bassist, lives about an hour or so away, hour and a half. And so he can't come up all the time. So we're like, we started our practice early and make sure we wanted to like run through the tracks, get everything, you know, get the set all planned out. We went way more in depth with like between song transitions, a lot of like, you know, we built a lot of like intros to songs so that it's not just me going 1, 2, 3, 4, you mm-hmm. know, starting a song.
Yep.
So there's a lot of like tracks that, you know, flow from one song to the next. And I also, we're incorporating like a sample pad for the first time. So like a fair amount of the electronic elements, I'm actually playing, like I'm leaning over and playing them on a sample pad.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a whole new instrument for me to play and to remember how everything flows together and like, oh, this song, I play it.
Yeah.
The next time this sample comes in, I'm playing mm-hmm. drums, so I don't play it. There's a lot.
Now, you guys are hitting the road with Glacier Veins, who's like from the Pacific Northwest as well, right? They're like the Oregon area.
Yeah, they're from Portland.
Okay. So I saw that you have a Seattle date, but you're not playing El Corazon. Is that place still around?
It is. Elko is still around. We wanted to play something a little bit smaller and like sell it out. That's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Fingers crossed we get there. We're on our way, but it's not sold out yet. Elko's cap is like 650, I think. And so we definitely couldn't sell that out. But no, it's still around. I'm sure we'll be playing there again soon.
Okay. And then I guess follow-up question is, why didn't you get Nick and Bobby from Gatsby's American Dream to play as Money Pit as your openers?
I think we played a show with Money Pit a couple of years back. One of the tough things about coming back to like the touring and like show scene post COVID is that a lot of bands like didn't survive. It's the yeah. same. It's not only in the music scene, but like in, you know, a lot of companies, like, same thing. A lot of bands, you know, whether it was a cancellation for someone being a piece of shit or you know, people just saying, you know, fuck this. I want to play shows and I can't play shows. So I'm just going to go back and get a job. When we actually had a hard time finding locals for our, we just announced, or actually I think tomorrow we're announcing a Tacoma show. We had a hard time finding locals for it because no bands are around. Like all the bands that we knew, were like broke up.
Yeah.
Damn. Well, you know, we got plenty of homies on the East Coast. So when are you guys making your way over here?
Next year we will do a full US for sure. We were kind of with this tour, we wanted to like kind of dip our toes into the, into like the touring landscape again. I mean, like it's as much as we want to, you know, be like past COVID, the reality is we're not, and we're still like COVID still exists. Mm-hmm. Get your fucking vaccines, fucking like vax up, mask up when you go to shows.
Seriously.
If I can play drums on stage wearing a mask, you can wear a mask while you're standing there watching us play.
Absolutely.
We are, John and I are going to be wearing masks while we play in at every show. Ryan and Brian obviously can't, they're singing. We didn't want to go do a full US. We didn't feel ready. We want to see what the what this West Coast situation is like, see how we can get through it. Hopefully everything goes well. All our shows, actually every show is proof of vax or like, you know, 48-hour COVID test.
Yeah.
We'll see how tightly those are enforced at the venues. I don't know.
Yeah. It's the right thing to do. You know, it's just like you know, if live music ever wants to come back in a capacity in which the way it was before COVID, like this is just what we have to do. We've got to make sure that if you're attending shows, you're either vaccinated or have, you know, a negative PCR and you're not sitting there trying to expose people. So, you know, it's kind of crazy to think about, but, so let's real quick, before we start talking a little bit about the Seattle Kraken, we'll do, little quick message from our sponsor, the DraftKings, the Kings of the Draft.
Hockey is back, and DraftKings Sportsbook has an unbelievable offer to celebrate the greatest sport on ice. New customers can bet just $1 on any hockey game and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. Doesn't matter if it's a one-time clapper or a deft deflection, however they light the lamp, you win. If Sportsbook isn't available in your state, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings Daily Fantasy Sports Contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use promo code THPN, throw down $1 on any hockey game, and win $100 in free bets if either team scores a goal. This week, one puck in the net nets you a big win with promo code THPN at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
One time clapper. Just gotta love that hockey speak, you know? It's the best. I love it. Yeah. DraftKings, man. They're pretty cool. I did a fantasy football like DraftKings sort of deal like a couple of times last year, and I was gonna do one this year, but my fantasy team right now is just doing so good, and I'm not gonna try to jinx it. So even though Tyler
Higbee, no one wants to hear about your fantasy team, Tom.
Tyler Higbee is being a dick right now. He doesn't even have a catch. This is unbelievable. But so, hey, let's talk hockey and let's talk a little bit about the Seattle Kraken. So, did you get an opportunity to watch that
Expansion draft.
Expansion draft.
I watched not the actual like live stream of it, but constantly refreshing on my phone to see like which players we picked.
Yeah, it was rough. It was a little bit of a rough presentation. ESPN, I think, got off on the wrong foot. I know what they tried to do. You know, they tried to like kind of get as much Seattle as they could into this draft, and they ended up like showing up to the fish market and like essentially like gave a bunch of people like they're like pulled draft picks out of like Starbucks cups and stuff. It was like it was
all Seattle is, it's Starbucks and fish.
It was something, man. But you know, as far as the team is concerned, you know, I guess it's kind of, you know, Knights vibes where it's like you don't really know how they're going to come together as a team. You know, they seem to just be like a hodgepodge of players, but that's what everyone thought with the Golden Knights. And here they were getting to the Cup Finals, their first year in existence. So as far as the Kraken is concerned, you know, don't have to go too crazy, but who are you excited to see put on that sweater and play a little bit?
I'm excited for Brandon Tanev and Jordan Eberle.
Yeah.
And then what's my fucking guy? Mark Giordano.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Just long time NHLer. I'm psyched that there's someone with a little bit of experience on the team.
Yeah. Mikey, do you want to do your best Tanev face real quick? There it is. Perfect. Like I said, that draft was a little silly, but you know, they've got a pretty good team. You know, they made a couple of moves in the offseason, you know, to kind of bolster their roster a little bit. And of course, I'm sure as the season progresses, they'll do a little bit more of the same when, you know, some players open up, you know, the teams are having fire sales or whatever they might have. But really super awesome that we're getting more hockey in the Pacific Northwest because, you know, as of right now, it's really just Vancouver, you know? So, so now that there's some hockey up there, I think it's going to be great for the city and everything. Now, you know, as far as like kind of getting into being a fan of a newer team, you know, I know you guys have a lot of plans for touring and all that kind of stuff, but like, have you gotten tickets yet? Have you tried to get tickets yet? Like, what's the kind of landscape around, the buzz in Seattle, like as far as like getting the games, is it like crazy reselling or what are we at right now?
I have a couple guys on my men's league team that went in on season tickets.
Oh, cool.
So I have like access to occasional games just through, you know, no one can make it. Who wants to take my nice. Tickets.
Yeah.
So as far as I know, I think the season ticket like thing is sold out. I'm pretty sure that sold out like right away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen anything about resale yet. Mm-hmm. But it's also weird because I'm sure there's lots of people that would intend on being, you know, going to games regularly who are choosing not to go into any crowded room yet. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea what it's going to look like, for actual home games.
Yeah.
Because there are a couple of preseason games. We had like one in Spokane at wherever the Chiefs, the WHL team plays, and then one in up in Everett, which is where the Everett Silver Tips, the other WHL team play. Look, I mean, there were a lot of people in the crowd for those games.
Awesome.
I'm pretty sure it's like the highest selling jersey right now, or maybe even like, you know, first year sales. Like it's breaking records for how many people are buying that jersey.
Awesome. Oh yeah, dude, Seattle has been waiting for an NHL team for like 20 years.
Seriously. Now, the last time we had you on, I'm pretty sure we still didn't know that they were the Kraken. We didn't obviously know their jersey, and like I'm pretty sure the arena wasn't even done at mm-hmm. that point when we had you on. So, a lot has changed in a short amount of time. You know, you have a roster, you're about to be playing in, you know, less than a week. So, you know, we also on the last episode talked about how you grew up a Philadelphia Flyers fan. So, like, how does that work? Have you like stopped following them completely and are just like all in on the Kraken, or you're like, you know what, Kraken didn't do such a great job year one at the expansion draft. I'm going to keep following the Flyers for a little bit longer.
Nah, I'm going to be a two-team fan. I will be repping Flyer Orange for every game, except for when they play the Kraken. I don't know how I'm going to feel. I think I'm just going to have to watch the game and see how my heart reacts. I mean, obviously I'm psyched for the Kraken and to become a fan, but I can't imagine that I'm going to watch that game and be psyched every time the Kraken score on my Flyers. I mean, I've lived my entire life watching the Flyers goalies give up trash goals.
Ronnie Hextall. Yeah. I mean, that's a tough thing. I've never been put in that position. As a sports fan, growing up in New York, every New York team by the time I was born was already established. I mean, I guess with the exception of the Brooklyn Nets or whatever, but I mean, I've never had the distinction of being oh wow, my city has a franchise now. So that is a tough thing. You spend your whole life repping a team, and I mean, there's nothing wrong with having two favorite teams. There are some people that get so crazy angry about that. Oh, how can you like two teams? It's bro, the Flyers and the Kraken might play each other once a season or in the playoffs if they both, have deep runs and end up going to the cup. But I mean, they don't bother one another. Now, if you were going to sit here and be I'm a Islanders and a Flyers fan. It's what? That doesn't make sense to me. You can't like teams that are going to play each other eight times a year and develop a rivalry. But I can see how that'll be tough. I mean, that one Kraken Flyers game, you can just Harvey Dent it up and just have two different colors on your face.
The only time I have an issue with, the double, a multi-fandom mm-hmm. thing is when it's two teams that historically win. Get people, people it's easier to root for a team that wins, but mm-hmm. if you're just a Red Wings and a Blackhawks fan. Okay, Blackhawks 10 years ago. But
that's true.
You picked, two teams that historically win. Mm-hmm. It's kind of fucking lame. I want to be a fan of a team that that breaks me a little bit so that once in my lifetime we can get a cup win and I can actually feel good about myself.
And I'm even cool to the point where if you say oh, I'm a Flyers fan, but I really love Nate McKinnon, over on the Avs or I'm a big Islanders fan, but man, do I love watching, Victor Hedman, or something like that. I don't know who says they love watching Victor Hedman. That guy's just so old, but that's the only guy that could come to my brain. But I mean, you see that happen a lot more in football and basketball and stuff, right? I grew up in New York. I'm a Knicks fan, but every time Harden touches the ball or every time LeBron touches the ball, I just love watching him. And you get that, we've got a buddy from Long Island who's has been a diehard Patriots fan all his life. And Brady moved over to Tampa Bay, and all of a sudden he's just Tampa Bay and New England played each other last Sunday. And mm-hmm. I don't know how his body didn't just spontaneously combust into millions of pieces. It's just crazy. But I can appreciate it. And I always say, whenever we talk about it on this podcast, it's, because the NHL is, again, still that fourth sport, it's still that kind of that sport that's trying to climb back up into being in the forefront. Anytime anyone is oh, I like two teams or I like that, I'm cool, awesome. The more money you put into both of these franchises, the more you buy, the more you tweet about them, the more you put them into the forefront of all of this, the better. So I'm all for that. As far as, kind of seeing the Kraken's team develop, I know we talked about, Ebbs and Tanev and stuff like that. But we kind of touched upon, one of the intangible factors is how this team is going to kind of put it all together. So it'll be interesting to kind of see. So I guess based on the team, what do you kind of see in them as what their kind of DNA is going to be? Are they going to be a scoring forward team, or are they going to be a little bit more balanced? Are they going to be more defensive minded? What do you think you're going to see out of them?
Dude, I have no idea. I think it is way too early for me to give any sort of realistic analysis on anything. Mm-hmm. I just hope we aren't like dead last in the conference. Honestly, I have no fucking clue. I mean, that's basically what everyone said about the Knights too.
Yeah.
But I mean, just in general, like the concept of being able to build an entire team out of like bottom second liners and third liners seem like it was broken with the Knights. Obviously, they went straight to the cup, but I'm hoping we get the same. It's the same broken thing for us not having basically any fourth liners right off the bat.
And honestly, I feel like the fact that all of these teams wrote all of these players off, they're all going to play with a chip on the shoulder. Like, that's exactly what happened with the Knights. And, you know, these aren't scrubs. Like, no joke, in the Islanders-Penguins series, one name that, like, you know, I obviously watched the Penguins eight times, like, other than, like, Crosby and Malkin and Rust, like, Tanev's name was the name that you heard the announcers and, like, the play-by-play commentators talking about all the time. Like, he's not a big, flashy name, but, you know, he was all over the ice, and I feel like that's a solid pickup that maybe isn't flashy and doesn't get, like, people buying a bunch of Tanev jerseys, but I feel like that's a solid move.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's going to be a chance for, like, Jordan Eberle to kind of, like, come back into the limelight and prove that he was, you know, he was worthy of being a high draft pick.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, Tom and I, definitely me more than Tom, because Tom actually hated Jordan Eberle when he was on the Islanders.
I didn't like him.
I feel like, you know, he came from a really tough situation in Edmonton. And then when he comes to the Islanders, like, John Tavares leaves and Matt Barzal takes the spotlight. So, like, even that was a tough situation for him. So, like, now he's kind of the guy. He's, like, the Kraken fans have at least a kind of a superstar on the team. Like, so I feel like he could definitely turn it around and be a 30 goal scorer. We're not going to get like 50 out of him, but, you know, 30 goals out of him, I could see 30 and 30.
And Jaden Schwartz is another guy that looked real good in the preseason. And I hope we can keep that shit up during the regular season.
And I mean, like, there are a couple of other, like, you know, kind of players that give you guys quite a bit of depth. I mean, you know, Yanni Gourde is on the team. You know, you've got
another one. Like, when we played Tampa, that's another name that was just, like, pissing. He was getting under the skin of the Islanders players. So that could be a solid move, too, to build around.
Yeah, and then you've got the defenseman from the Stars that they took, Oleksiak, who's like 6'7". I mean, he's like enormous. So, you know, you're going to have like that, you know, kind of physical presence too, which all in all, it's really such an interesting thing whenever you have like a franchise in year one, because like you get to see like, you know, are they going to, you know, have that Golden Knights string, and are they going to just be fantastic, or is it going to be a little bit of time for them to gel? But like, it's going to be so interesting to watch, and like, I'm really excited to get to see Seattle play a little bit. I'd love to at some point. You know, I've even talked to my wife about it. Like, I want to do like a Pacific Northwest trip at some point. You know, just do like Seattle, Portland, and Vancouver, just to like get to see it, because I hear it's beautiful. But like, I would love to be able to get to a Kraken game just to like say, hey, like, you know, I was able to experience it. So,
and I mean, you have no idea how the team is going to work together, because every other team has an identity that they're built around their two or three superstars. So, you know, like, Penguins obviously base everything around Sidney Crosby, Flyers around Claude Giroux for the longest time. And there's no like one true superstar. It's going to have to be someone, you know, that steps up and just like has a career resurgence. Cause like you said, it's all people that weren't being, you know, that like weren't held on or cared about by their previous teams.
So like, do you think, you know, in the infancy of this team, like, you know, the Kraken's management are just going to reach out to the home team and be like, listen, guys, we need a goal song. What do you got for us?
Bro, the first thing when we started talking to our label about the, about like, brand partnerships and who we would want to work with, like, first thing I was like, the Kraken are coming. whatever you got to do, we'll give it, we'll give them the song for free. It's just exposure bucks.
Love it.
I don't give a shit.
You mean number two after getting you on Bar Down Breakdown?
that was the number one.
That was number one. Number two, cracking.
Oh, God, like, if only.
Dude, that's the dream. I'm trying to get, I feel like the sports-themed band name, feel like easy, that should be our way in.
Absolutely, man.
You can have, you can, we'll write a song for you. You can have it.
Sneak right in there. And then they just announced, I think last week, the NHL 22 soundtrack. And woof, man, it is not good.
And say all, I just saw All Time Low post that they're playing like an NHL event in Tampa.
Tampa, yeah.
And that, I mean, like, that's cool. Like, I love the fact that like alternative music is getting like that chain into this stuff. But like,
yep.
When you look at that soundtrack though, man, like, ugh, I think like the only thing that's like anywhere near alternative on it is, I think, maybe 21 Pilots. But like, other than that, it's
Angels and Airwaves.
Oh, I guess so. But then again, like, I can't imagine Angels and Airwaves has a place on any hockey anything. Cause like, if you've listened to any Angels and Airwaves, it's just like 16th notes on the like hi-hat. And it's just like, nah, 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 nah. It's more like literally music to go to space to and meet aliens, which is kind of like.
There's a Volbeat song on here.
Volbeat.
There's a ton of bands I've never even heard of.
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, I don't even know what it is. And it's kind of
the Machine Gun Kelly, Kellen Quinn songs on there. Kenny Hoopla.
That's true. But I think. I don't know. It's so strange because we've had the opportunity to talk to Steven Sabel, who like curate these playlists, and like from talking to them and then seeing this, it's like, did like they lose their jobs or like did something happen? Because like, it just doesn't seem like their ethos. Cause when they talked to us, they were all about like, yeah, we want to like expose new music and new this and new that. And I'm just like
kind of that Tony Hawk mindset.
Right. Yeah. And I remember like us even saying like, if you guys need anyone for like your new soundtracks, like come at us. Like we've got like all these people that have been on the show that would be perfect for it. And they were like, yeah, totally. And then like they put out Volbeat, you know? So it's just like, I don't know, but
maybe but you guys don't know these bands yet, Tom, just like you didn't know the home team until I had to tell you about them. So
I guess you're right. Maybe
stop
being
a gatekeeper, Tom.
I'm not trying to gatekeep. I just don't want to listen to Volbeat while I'm trying to, what did you say in the ad? A one-time clapper. I want to clap. A
bunch of these young up and coming artists like Machine Gun Kelly.
Yeah. He's an up and comer. Conor McGregor tried to beat him up, you know? That's like, hey, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do. But I'm super psyched, man. I'm super pumped for Kraken hockey. So I am gonna ask you one last question, and then I'm sure Mikey's got one. But my last question, I'm just gonna circle it back to music. So I know you guys said that you know, you had told us that a lot of you guys had influences in hardcore and metal and stuff like that. On this new record, like, were there any like metal bands or hardcore bands that you could say like directly influenced some of the things that you played? Like, whether it was just like a lick or like a fill or like just, you know, something that you specifically played, and then maybe something that like the band put in that was kind of like an homage to some of the stuff that you guys love.
I would say Meshuggah is probably the like heaviest thing that influenced us in any way.
Okay.
Just like the idea of using an 8-string on things. Mm-hmm. Meshuggah is like the first thing that comes to mind when I think of an 8-string guitar.
For sure.
And I would say drum wise, I don't think I was really influenced by anything particularly heavy, because I didn't, my plan with the whole record was like, I want to simplify. So I felt like with our last record, everything was exactly, it was written exactly like, when I hear a riff, this is what I think of playing. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I played like what should be on a pop punk riff. I wanted on this record to make, and I thought the honestly, looking back, the fills are boring. Like all the fills that I wrote were just like straight 16th notes moving around the toms. So what I really wanted to do on this record was to kind of make the choruses simpler and have it be much more like, I mean, just straight four on the floor all over the place.
Yeah.
But have my fills be more complicated. So I kind of like open things up and then also at the same time add more complexities in like the little spots where I get the chance to.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were not really influenced by heavy music as much, but John was definitely influenced by like a lot of West Coast hip hop.
Okay.
One thing in particular, there's a lot of like, I guess we call them stabs. So think like mm-hmm. the intro to Forgot About Dre and like the dun, 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 that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's that type of note is used a lot in like hip hop and R&B from like the 90s and 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took that and moved that to guitar all over the place on the new record. So less of heavy inspiration aside from like the eight string aspect.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, a lot of inspiration from like hip hop and R&B.
Awesome. Love it.
All right. So Daniel, I got a question for you. When you guys sent Revival the final mix, did they come back with a brand new contract for you guys?
They,
no comment?
They were fucking stoked. And I mean, I would hope so. We were fucking stoked. I think we're in a really interesting position because I think we're, aside from maybe I Set to Kill, like obviously Alisana there, but that's Sean's band. So like mm-hmm. they're on the label for forever.
Yeah.
We were in an interesting position because we had a ton of growth from the first record to this one. When we put out our first record, I think we had maybe 3,000 monthly listeners on Spotify.
And oh, wow.
Now we're at, I think we have like 170,000. So we have, from the time of putting out that first record to now, there's been a ton of growth. We did not get offered a new contract yet. We are still in the middle of one. They have us for one right now. We'll see what goes on for the next record. I think our contract is up soon. So we actually are going to get back into the renegotiations phase. So we'll see what happens. I don't know.
I feel like if I was running that label, that's exactly how I would play it. Like, all right, yep, you guys earned it. Next contract. We're locking you guys up.
And we're on our rookie contract right now. So hopefully, you know, we'll be able to have a little stronger leg to stand on and get a little, you know, a little bit better of a deal for ourselves. Who knows?
Dude,
we'll see how that goes.
I don't want to be a homer, but Revival and all the new bands that they've been signing and you know what they have in the works, I just love what they're doing. So I'm super pumped that this album's coming out on Revival, and I hope that it just blows you guys up. It blows up the label as well.
I hope that we have an impact on bands. Like, I remember growing up thinking about bands on like Drive Through and Victory and Equal Vision, where I was like, mm-hmm. oh yo, I want to be like, I'm literally looking at an Armor for Sleep vinyl on my desk right now, past like behind the computer. I'm like, I want to be like that. I want to do like be on that label.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope there are, you know, people that are seeing us and being like, oh, the home team, I want to be like on, I want to be on the label they're on.
Yeah.
No one will ever tell me that, but I hope that happens to some people.
Well, I mean, you're going out with Glacier Veins and they're on Equal Vision, right?
Yeah. That's true.
There you go.
Yeah.
But,
if you haven't listened to that band, fucking sick. They had
they're
a record.
Yeah, they're so good.
They had a record that came out, I think in like March or April of 2020. Mm-hmm. So like right when COVID hit, they were on tour, opening for, I don't remember if it was Tiny Moving Part. They were on a pretty good sized tour, and it got canceled, you know, and they had like halfway through and they had to just drive home. So that album did not get the like love that it should have gotten. And I hope that, you know, by us taking them out, they're able to, you know, grow and get bigger. Cause we've been, I remember we've played with Glacier Veins a couple times just in the Northwest, and we had talked about touring together, or Malia and I had talked about touring together like years ago. So psyched that, you know, they said yes and we get the chance to take them out.
Yeah, definitely. They're a great band. You know, they've done some super cool stuff. That record is great. So awesome, man. Daniel, thank you so much for kind of hanging with us and taking the time out of your day to chat with us. Super excited for Slow Burn, the Casey Musgraves tribute record to come out. No, seriously, man, I'm not trying to be a homer for the home team, but it's one of those things where, like, you know, I'm a little picky with like what I pre-order these days because like vinyl takes so long to get, but like as soon as Slow Bloom came up, I was just like, gotta get it. So you're gonna be part of my record collection and my record spreadsheet, which one day I'll show everybody. It's nerdy as shit, but I love it. But I'm really excited. So Slow Bloom, October 22nd on Revival Records. So we're talking just
Revival Recordings. Get it right, Tom.
Revival Recordings. I'm sorry. Recordings record. I can't keep up, man. Every label like puts this little like Evan's label is like Storm Chasers Limited. It's like I can't just say like Storm Chasers Records. I can't say any of this shit. I don't know. It's crazy. But do what you got to do to get this record in your ears. Go pre-save it on Spotify, Apple Music. Go pre-order it. Are there any copies of the record left, or are they kind of slowly but surely moving? Because
yeah, we sold out of, we had one variant that we put out a couple, like I think about a month ago, mm-hmm. that came with a limited edition Polaroid. So we cool. took Polaroids throughout the whole recording process, and nice. Each of these the limited edition one is, this is the one I'm pushing even though it's gone, mm-hmm. each one came with a hand numbered and signed by us Polaroid from you know, from the recording process.
That's, I think, awesome.
That was at 7 left last Friday. Mm-hmm. And I think we've already had like 5 people tweet at us that they bought one of those. So I think they're gone. Yeah. But I think the other ones are all limited to 200 copies, and mm-hmm. we're, none of them are sold out yet, but they are selling. Pre-order the record. If you're going to buy it now. Help us chart on the Billboard charts.
Hell yeah, man. And then real quick, I know you said you guys have a Patreon as well, but if you want to just real quick blast some socials and where they can find the Patreon and where they can find everything, just have at it.
Yeah, new record, Slow Bloom, comes out October 22nd. Pre-save it on Spotify, on Instagram, we're at The Home Team. Follow along. We're posting tons of content. We've got TikTok, Twitter, everything. We don't fuck with Facebook all that much anymore. Sorry that you're on Facebook Live. Yeah, we got a Patreon, but most importantly, just when the record comes out, jam it, show some friends.
Hell yeah. Well, Daniel,
I'm going to go, I've got a game in like an hour at the Kraken practice facility, which is 5 minutes from me.
Hell yeah.
That's where I got to go tonight.
All right, man. Well, good luck. And once again, thanks for coming on. And hopefully the Kraken have a great season, but we know you guys are going to have a great tour. And Slow Bloom, October 22nd, man. Can't wait.
Dude, thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, dude. Yep. I hope you have a one-time clapper tonight, dude.
I play defense, and this is like I play on the top division in our men's league.
Oh, all right.
I am in the bottom third skill-wise for sure. Like there's some fucking monsters on my team. My other team, lower division, that's where I score. I don't score on this one.
So, all right. So we'll save the clappers for another day. Daniel, thanks again so much. The home team, Slow Bloom, October 22nd. Go get it. Go do it. I'm fucking on one. And that's all.